outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Gym.
Well, Kyle decided to play hooky today. He's out fishing on a boat, doing a retreat thing with some folks back in Michigan, I believe. Seems pretty cold to me to do fishing in Michigan.
Well, hey, it's fun. He's out. He's outside. That's good.
I hope it's good. We'll find out next week how well he does. If he's back in time for us to record, because Sarah and I are gone next week. So we may not have one next week. But next time we get Kyle back here, we'll be able to sort all that out.
And just people just talk to Jesus.
And that other voice you hear for folks who more recent,
a blast from the past,
more recent listeners to the God Journey, Brad Cummings, my podcast partner for over 700 episodes of the God Journey, joined us on our 1,000th episode a while back. And I thought, man, it'd be fun to just have Brad back sometime when Kyle's indisposed. Well, Kyle's indisposed today, and Brad and I had a chance to grab lunch. And so here we are.
So I'm disposed. He's indisposed. I'm disposed. You're disposed. Whatever that means.
But not disposable.
Yes. Thank you. Wonderful.
So Thanksgiving coming up, man. What's the Cummings household most thankful for this time?
You know what? I think we are absolutely enjoying having all those little ones. Jared has four under 5 years old, and Jonathan and Nina are just about to have their baby in January.
Oh, wow.
So we will have a full house with everyone there. And I think what I love is I'm looking at all of my kids and they haven't picked up all the religious diseases of the past. They are all kind of finding their own fresh, wonderful way, great, following after Jesus without all the institutional trappings.
Ah, that's good.
Yeah. So there's life outside the farm.
That's one way to do that free range chicken thing.
Yes. We got the free range believer family.
Or free range sheep. Somebody recently called them feral.
Feral believers?
Yeah.
That needs to have more facial hair, I guess.
Really?
Feral, that's my idea. It's like when you look at like a feral cat, it's like, ooh, they're
more whiskery than non-feral cats?
I think so.
Oh, I had no idea. I'm not a cat connoisseur, so. No.
But I love how they have been finding their way, and it really has never been needing the institutional validation. They can be in and out. But it's like, I think they see through all of the religious BS.
No, that's good to do. No matter where you're following Jesus, huh?
Yeah. But I find like all of the things that have been happening in our world, it's like, that's a scary thing for an awful lot of people because they don't find their validation very well outside of the four walls that they grew up in.
Or what the club is doing, or what mainstream Christian thought is.
The religious industrial complex.
And when you find yourself outside of it and don't find your security in Jesus, it can be a scary place to be.
Because there's not a lot of the lemmings that are traveling in the way that the free-range believers are.
No, I think by definition, a lemming wouldn't be following. There's two people going that way and 150 people going that way, so.
I think I'm wired where I kind of go like, what do the two people know?
If you find your comfort in the crowd or you find your comfort in the narrower road with seems to be less people on it.
I think what I find fascinating is I don't know why, because I look at a lot of my other very well-intentioned friends and professional brothers who are in the same space. And I just go like, Lord, you've graciously pulled a lot of veils from the way in which I see stuff. But I don't, at this point in my life, feel like I have any capacity to take credit for that. I just go like, wow, I recognize that the blinders and the veils are there on a lot of people, and I'm not sure how I've shed mine, necessarily.
Or if you have. You ever think about that?
Well, I think the more I grow, the more I realize I thought I had less blinders than I did, only to find out, oh, those were thick.
Took more than one time pulling off the blinders to get it. I find that an interesting conundrum because people talk about it a lot. You know, if after 2,000 years, you would think there'd be more followers of Christ in the world that really gets the love thing, the transformational thing, the holding capacity in their heart for justice and kindness and compassion for the other, people aren't on the home team, And yet after 2,000 years, it doesn't seem like that's where mainstream Christianity runs.
No, I think, you know, we were having lunch. I think whenever there's a monetary stream attached to it, it has to then become sort of systematized or industrialized. And anytime it becomes that kind of thing, I don't think you are centering on the person of Jesus.
And not even monetized in the sense of greed and trying to find maximum income, but just simply, how do we keep the doors open? How do we pay salaries? And so we find ourselves, like, oftentimes, I think the Sunday morning model that we do is because it takes a certain amount of people getting together. It's something they all want to come to, that enough of them give 10% of their income that we can make a go of this thing.
Yeah.
And so that shapes our theology, quite frankly.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it kind of puts it in an unintended box that says it's valid there and through these expressions, but somehow it becomes less and less of a 24/7 lived out life.
Yeah, and it seems that is overt now. You're validated if you're part of one of these things, even if all of those things don't agree on which ones are the right ones and which ones are the wrong ones. But the validation, that I know people feel it more probably in other parts of the country than they do out here in the West, but being somewhere on Sunday morning is the validation of faith for many people.
Yeah. And if you're not, you really are. Most of the quote faithful that are validated from those things look at you askance, as though there's got to be some real issues with your belief system.
Get a little bit of that side eye, huh?
Yeah. Well, a little more than just a little bit of the side eye. It's more like, what's wrong with you?
A pointing of the finger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think the thing that I would love for us to kind of delve into is the people that are freshly waking up to this, you know, sort of tractor beam of the very person and love of Jesus. There's not a lot of things that help them find that path and continue to walk down that, because most all the new believer things are all kind of couched in the old covenant ritual, do better, you know, try harder, do better, kind of do better, try harder thing. I forget what that's.
Do good, get good, do bad, get bad?
Yeah. Where we're going? Yeah. Well, the whole bit, I'm going to try harder and I'm going to do better and I'm going to commit myself to following God. I'm going like, okay, even those with the full gas tank of intention, they run out. And then it's like you have to start religiously pretending that works.
And when you look back over 2,000 years of our Christian, quote unquote, history, you see that it's always becomes more of a system to work, whether it's a philosophical system, a doctrinal system. It's always the life of Jesus is doing these things, not doing these things, practicing these disciplines, not doing that. It's rarely been about connecting to the person of Christ, Christ in you, the hope of glory.
Yeah.
And we do so little to help people connect to that reality and live out of their heart. Instead, and I think this is a big part of why we get the systems we do, it's easier to pass on a program, follow this, follow that, and you'll be fine, than it is to really help an individual connect with Jesus at a personal level.
Yeah. And I think one of the biggest, like, repeated phrases out there online that people love to kind of pass along, like, ooh, this is really, you'll know the truth and the truth will set you free. But so few people that are using that are talking about a person. They're usually talking about some new little tidbit of information or some knowledge that they just got. And somehow that will set me free. And I'm going like, I don't think it does. If that truth is not a person who wraps their arms around you and convinces you that you're loved, I don't think we can really hear well the things that we're hiding from.
And the other side of that, I think, is when truth comes at us, it disturbs us before it frees us.
Yes.
It makes us really think, particularly about the things that I'm doing for comfort's sake that are not helpful to me learning to be his disciple in the world, learning to follow him. So I always like to say, you shall know the truth and the truth will set you free, but it will mess with you first.
Yes, it will.
Almost every bit of truth that comes to my life, I've often said, oh, I hope this isn't right. I hope this is not the way. And then when you find out it is, and it takes the risk of personal comfort to explore the depth of who Jesus is and how he calls us to follow him, That's a scary part before the freedom begins to set in.
And I think it's because we hear most of those things as another thing to do. As if I've got to get that right because I had it wrong and therefore, oh no, I'm evaluating myself and I don't measure up. As opposed to recognizing if we were secure in the fact that God loves me, he just absolutely does, then I can let those things be things he changes in me, as opposed to things I have to change in order to be affirmed in that love.
And I think being loved does help us take the risk.
Yeah.
Because I don't need my validation from someone else. I don't need it from being part of the herd. I'd rather find it inside the reality of how he's shaping his life in me. We talked last week with Kyle about my recent trip to ORU and realizing how far afield I have come from the last 50 years, from what I started out to become, what I started out thinking was true. And this is the way to do the life. And it was mostly those kind of programmed things. And then Jesus kept inviting me down different roads through some very painful things, for sure, through some just, that's curious. I wonder what that looks like down that road. And the markers for me became very different. The markers used to be good conformity to established sets of things that we all do together. To how do I really follow that voice that draws me to something more real, that challenges the places in my life that were broken and quite honestly illusioned? And that involves some disillusioning so that you can figure out what's real. But I wouldn't trade the journey. I wouldn't trade where Sarah and I had ended up for anything.
No. And I think one of the things that is so frustrating to me is most of the churches I know and the guys who lead them, I actually think many of them are sincere. I don't think they know they're doing it wrong and they have some ill-gotten motive behind what they're doing. I think they've had all of this stuff sort of inbred and taught to them as though this is the right way to go. But I'm going like, it doesn't work. It really doesn't satisfy at that deepest level of feeling like God absolutely knows me and has accepted me and is at work in me to change me into his image. Most of what I've known in Christianity has been the pursuit of figuring out, oh, that's what he wants. Therefore, how do I do that? I finally realized maybe at 59, I'm not real good at that. You know,
it took you to 59. I knew you weren't good at that 20 years ago.
Bro. Yeah, no, I know. But the truth is I think the penny finally dropped and I've become really fascinated the whole notion of the difference between the old and the new covenant, where it's like virtually everything in the old covenant that we understand, it's man's effort to somehow become pleasing to God, as opposed to God's promise and vow to do a work of change in us from the inside out. Religion is always trying to conform my outward behavior and then give me a something to do. It might, but it never produces the thing that it promises.
It doesn't. It's hard to imagine why we needed so many centuries of law before we could get to the cross. Because God gave them that religion. God asked them to do these things and not do those things. And it was never intended to work. It said that none righteous, no, not one, or none just, no, not one. So it was never going to work. It was meant to be temporary until the Son could be revealed. And yet we take the New Testament stuff and put it right back into the Old Testament forms.
Well, it's weird. I had someone unpack some of this for me, and I'm going like, wow, that would have been really helpful if in my seminary education, someone would have given me this perspective. They looked at the Old Covenant, and they said it was never God's idea. It was first given at Sinai, and it was the offer of God to speak to everybody.
Right.
And yet they were freaked out and they ran away because it was too terrifying. I'm going like, well, God, you did kind of show up in a mountain of fire and your voice was so thunderous, they were frightened. But they came up with the old covenant. They said, Moses, you go talk to him and then we'll do everything that you tell us to. And I'm going like, that's the old covenant, but that was their idea. That wasn't God's desire.
In the same way the king was their idea, not God's desire, but God gave it to them.
He acquiesced to what they asked for, but I don't think that was ever, quote, the covenant. As far as God's going like, I want to write my words on your heart. He talked about how, as opposed to them accepting his voice and his writing his voice on their heart, because their hearts of stone had a hard time accepting him, they were given tablets of stone, and everything that was meant to be internal was dealing first with the external. Kind of like how they're rearranging your whole house right now.
Yeah, we've got a little bit of noise from the background. We've got construction people here today. Sarah and I had a slab leak that meant all of our plumbing had to be changed from under the slab, rerouted through the attic. And so now they're repatching all the things they had to destroy to get that stuff underneath there.
I feel like my God journey has been that way.
Do you?
Yeah, I do. I realized that my religion had a slab leak and God had to rewire everything and replumb it. And I'm going like, gosh, Lord, do you do this to everybody?
Wow. We should wait till this goes away because it's going to be annoying.
But it is a good analogy of, I think, what we have to let God do to us.
And is that the scary reason why a lot of people hate to go down that road? Because I've got this here. It's not quite working right, but it's, you know, if we could just plug that little leak there and I can avoid that, I don't mind having things the way they are, as opposed to you want to rearrange just about everything and you want to cut holes in places and open doors in other places. Is that what you want?
That's too extreme.
And yet that's.
But, you know, I think one of the problems we have is that we have had the gospel proclaimed to us as the prize is the one day in eternity thing, as opposed to entering the kingdom and living with the king and his voice. Now we've put all of that off. And so if you offer me the get out of jail free card, for most people, they're quite satisfied with that.
And isn't that in part because the religious practice of Christianity is so boring that so asks of me what I don't have to give? Without the person of Christ being in our lives, shaping us, leading us, guiding us, taking on this adventure every day of what it means to follow him, then yeah, I just, you know, I'd like to just do the minimum I can do, get my get out of hell free card, and maybe the fun begins after we die.
That sadly is how I often hear the guys from In the Box proclaiming the gospel as that's the gospel. And I'm just going like, oh my gosh, that is not even close to the life we've been offered.
Yeah, even Colossians talks about being transferred from the kingdom of darkness into the kingdom of his beloved son. And that's meant to happen right here, right now, as God draws us out of the place where our life got twisted and tangled in things of the world and things of darkness, where our thoughts about God were unworthy of him. He's wanting to invite us out of that kingdom now and transfer us into the light. And we get to be saved now from the stuff in our life that has blinded us to the reality of God and has captivated us in our own baser instincts or desires. And to me, that's what makes this Christian experience so adventurous and so fun.
Absolutely, because I think most people's like, why do I need to be saved? Well, in order to go to heaven. And it's like, that's not absolutely wrong. It's just, it's not the point. And it's not a right now reality. That's a one day then. And I'm going like, most people, when they pray their little prayer and raise their hand, they have no idea what to do now between now and then. And I'm going like,
except follow the rules.
Yeah.
Don't do this. Do this.
Yeah. Which they don't seem to do very well if they're honest. And so I think they get discouraged. And then it's like, well, I did that. I tried that. And I'm going like, that's not the right pathway.
Or like for me, who was a pretty conscientious person trying to do all that, knowing I wasn't doing enough, knowing it wasn't working, but am I doing more than 90% around me? At least
I'm in the lead.
At least I don't know about the lead. At least I'm not behind. At least I'm somewhere in here of trying to do this and make, if it's not working for me, it's not working for them, but this is the best we got. And the journey I got kicked on about 30 years ago was one of beginning to discover love, beginning to live out of that. How is it that we would help people do that now? Instead of, to me, the easier thing when people get quote unquote saved is to give them a catechism of belief, give them some ethics they should try and follow, give them some rules, some practices that make them Christian in the world. None of that links people to the person and presence of Jesus in their heart,
who's meant to be known.
So what would we do differently to help that happen?
I think for me, I get back to my little childhood conversion. I was at this tiny little Bible study, and they were talking about Jesus as being like probably the best friend you could ever have. And they were using the felt board stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And in the midst of this lady talking about Jesus as a friend, I saw the felt character stand behind the board and wink at me. And so the truth is I was drawn into a relationship with a person. That was the first transaction that I was aware that I made. And it's like, that has forever been etched in me, going like, this is about a person who I'm meant to become friends with and get to know and be known by in a two-way communication thing. And I don't think that's the transaction that most people are invited into.
They're not. But if somebody wants that, how do we help them begin to experience that? They didn't see the little flannel guy jump around the back of the board right. And look at him. So
right. How
do we help people connect with that?
I think saturating them with the communication that is true, you can point to in the scripture that he loves them, and let them get percolated in that. I think that allows those words to start to come to life and to give them the expectation that they're absolutely meant to have communication back and forth. I don't think people start with that expectation. I think they think that's for the super holy, you know, the super professionals and just a few. And I don't think it's given as a, I don't know how you're ever going to experience that unless that becomes real. I don't know the light switch to flick to just make God's voice real to them, but I do know how to midwife the expectation for a friendship that he wants, that isn't a bunch of rules and you got to's.
I think one of the major distinctions between Old Covenant and New Covenant is the Old Covenant was, it starts with us. Love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Love your neighbors yourself. So we've got to conjure up all this stuff. I think the new covenant is love one another as I've loved you. That's the new command, which means this originates in him.
Yeah.
It doesn't start here. I offer the hunger, the willingness, but I don't offer the effort to make it happen. So I encourage people to start with, why don't you just begin to ask God to reveal himself to you?
Yeah.
And then watch for that to happen. It can happen immediately. It can take a while for God to untangle the stuff to help you see. But to begin to look to him, the presence in you, which is more of a heart thing than a head thing.
Yeah.
The problem with most teaching or writing or books that we have, it's ideas that we exchange brain to brain, head to head.
Yeah, it's all the knowledge stuff.
It is. And you can know a lot of stuff and not be able to live it, not be able to embrace the reality behind it. So my encouragement is, let God begin to make the initiative with you, and you be a watcher. You watch for that to unfold.
You know what I've been doing of recent date is I've been championing A Man Like No Other to people.
The book.
Yeah.
I remember this book.
Yes. And I said, you know, the most important thing is to find the person and the life of Jesus that you become familiar with. And as you look at that, I mean, I look at the whole thing that we put in there. It's like, this was trying to take God out of the religious ether and put him into the practical, tangible. This is what it looked like for him to engage with people. And I'm going like, I've been just suggesting people dig into that because it's got the beautiful, like, airbrush pictures. And you're going like, let yourself enter into that space as you seek to get to know him. Because to me, it's like, I can't do God's part in that equation. That's where I do put the onus on the Holy Spirit to say, you have to make this real for that person. I can't, and I'm not going to do the work harder trying to make it real for someone that isn't yet real. It's like, somehow, God, your presence has to be something that happens there that they become familiar with and go, oh, that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, I can't do it for them. And I want them to know they can't do it for themselves either.
Exactly.
This is something that God gives rise to in our heart. Your heart begins to recognize there's a voice there. There's a nudge there. There's fingerprints there that are beyond just my normal stuff and my normal day. And God delights in inviting us into that reality that moves us from the tangible, external, temporal, to that which is eternal, invisible, and alive.
I think the thing that we can do is invite the expectation of it being normal and something that God desires to make real in the life of that person. So it's like, you know, we can't come to God unless he draws us. Kelly and I were just in Barbados and we had a wonderful week over there. And at the end of the week, we ended up meeting a guy who's one of the original founding, his family is one of the original founding folks of that island. And his life was just absolutely destroyed a couple months ago. And then he wanted to spend the day with us. We just met him on a catamaran and he took us down to reggae land where, you know, it's, you can smell the waftings through the place. And we ended up having a chance to lead him to Jesus. And he said, well, what do I do now? And I kind of said, nothing. Let God become real to you and expect him to show up in ways that will all of a sudden make, he sent two of his friends to come meet you at a moment that you needed. But I just introduced him to a person. It was glorious. We're still texting back and forth. He says, I got a lot of questions. I said, I know who has the answers. So if I can be of any help to you in that journey, and it's been a blast. Kelly had a copy of the shack that she thought she was supposed to bring along with her on the trip. And she, you know, when the guy invited us to spend the day, it's like, she says, I think this is for him. I think this is why we came here. I'm going like, certainly seems to be.
That's cool.
Yeah. And I think it's inviting people into that relationship and trying to put some skin on that so it's not some weird, crazy thing. I said, just as you met two strangers right now, we've become people that kind of love each other through what's happened. Just add Jesus to that mix because he's why we're together.
Yeah. And he's the one that can take you on and show you what's real and what's not real and discomfort you with things that you might want to be backing away from and draw you into those things that he has for you that are life.
When people who the idea of hearing from God is such a strange idea, or they have already disqualified themselves, or I don't know how to do that. What do you do for someone to whom they're asking that question going like, I don't know how to make that happen?
I like the expectancy that God does, so you're looking for it. I don't love the expectation that this is what it's going to look like, because I think that gets in the way. It's going to be a voice in the closet. It's going to be, God's going to give me this thing I've been praying with, the fleecing kind of thing
right.
that Gideon did. Religion seems to set up a very artificial way to listen to God. Instead of quieting our heart enough, and I think what's real important is you surrender. You're not sitting there saying, God, I want you to do this. You surrender to what it is that he wants to do in you, what it is that he wants to share. And then you let it happen as it happens. Some people, it sounds like, and I think this is a problem, honestly, a lot of the charismaniac in the world has taught people that God does certain things in certain ways. So people have an expectation about
it's
that.
It's like the litmus test of.
Yeah. Like I'm going to ask this, God's going to answer that. And I tell people, I pray, God, who are you giving me to love today? And then people say, well, does God give you a list? I said, no, God awakens me to the possibility of looking at the encounters that come my way and being sensitive in the moment. I like my friend in New Zealand, since deceased, who's now getting to live the full reality of all this. He used to talk about God's voice as the growing conviction over time. Hmm. You have a thought in your head? And some of those thoughts are just you, and they'll be gone in 24, 48 hours.
Yeah.
But the thought in your head that is there 2 days later, 4 days later, and it's growing more certain that that might be Jesus speaking to you because of the people you've talked to or other things that have read that have kind of confirmed, hey, this is where God's aiming your heart. I like it being a little more open-ended than people have. And I'm just going to sit down and ask God this. He's going to answer that. And I'm going to ask this. He's going to answer that. It really is more of an organic connection than that, where the heart begins to sense presence. It begins to, I find thoughts wandering around in my head that are not my thoughts, either because they're too scary, I wouldn't think of that, or they're just more wonderful than Wayne's used to thinking. And then I zero in on those. What is God putting in my heart about that? What is he saying?
Because I think a lot of people have a very false expectation that does inhibit them. You know, if it's going to be Moses, you're going like, chances are not. You know, it's like, can God do that? Yeah, but I think I had a buddy that said, you know, God can speak in the whirlwind. He can speak in the fire. He can speak in the earthquake. But the truth is he often speaks in the still small voice, but rarely are we still or small. So it's hard for us to hear it. And I kind of went, you know, that's super helpful. I mean, just that little concept of going like, how do I quiet the noise inside me and actually start to listen for those kind of clear little better than I normally think thoughts. And you had something in the book that you've been writing with Toby.
Yeah.
That talked about the difference between rest and restlessness.
How do you know?
Because you gave me a copy and yeah. I've been absolutely enthralled with it. I'm going like, dude, this is your best stuff yet. it really is. I just sat there go like, wow, I've watched so much of your life. I got excited about your stuff before I knew you. Then I got to meet you. And then we've had this wonderful journey of a friendship for many years. And now I'm sitting there going like, wow. And what you and Toby have just written, I'm going like, you're now being able to take all of what it's seemingly been complex stuff and bring it down to a simplicity that leads towards actually living that out in the world today. And I'm going like, everyone needs to hear this. Everyone needs to have this paradigm shift. I mean, just the whole that righteousness is actually about justice and it's others centered as opposed to focused on our piety.
And it's a justice that love produces. It's not having a new standard of justice that we're all going to define as this is Christian justice. Go act this way in the world.
Yeah.
It's what love produces in the way that God shapes us from the inside. That's what shocked me most. The stuff that Toby was giving me that he had researched and studied was exactly the way love had taught me to live. Mm. And now there were scriptures that all of a sudden scriptures come alive that weren't alive before.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing that helps, I was going to go back to what you said earlier about listening to him and following him. I think one of the things that really helps is for us to get to God's pace. I think we mostly are so far ahead of God where everything's an emergency. I want God to intervene here. So I'm praying about things I want God to do, wisdom I think I need. And we spend all of our time staring at stuff that he's not speaking to us yet, or he's not paved the way to that yet. I know slowing to Sarah's pace and her post-traumatic stuff, now slowing to God's pace, which is, it's hard to follow Jesus when you're walking ahead of him.
Yeah, you can't see him.
And you're panicked, and Jesus intervene here, and Jesus intervene there. I think slowing down to the pace that God is in our life and asking him, what have you got to show me? And if he doesn't show you anything, relax in that until he does, because I think that's part of calling us back to himself rather than us way ahead of him trying to call him up to our
way. I think it requires the humility of realizing chances are you're not going to be able to fix this without him. And so if he's not focusing on that, maybe God has a different list of things that are of greater priority to him as he's working things in you than the list you've made that you've just impatiently wanting him to address.
Yeah, even the idea that he wants to fix everything I want him to fix in my life.
He doesn't seem to answer that list.
He seems like he has more in mind as to how to take something in my life and turn it for good more than he wants to just take it out of my life so I don't have to deal with it anymore.
We just want it gone as opposed to allowing it to transform us.
And so when we say, you know, God never speaks to me, I wonder if it's because what we're focused on him doing isn't what he has in mind. That's why coming to rest in his love and affection is job one. That's what I want him to lead me to do. How do I learn to rest in your love and your care so that when things come at me, I'm not telling you how to fix it. I'm not telling you what to do. I'm actually in there with that same thing in Hebrews about I've come to do your will, oh God. So I'm just here, God, today. What do you want of me? How are you working in my life? How do we follow you through? When I'm focused on that, there's more clarity than when I'm doing that prayerless thing of fix this, fix that, change that, do this.
If we don't get that right, we end up in just an umpteen different kinds of performance Christianity that kind of exhausts us. And even that is serving God's purpose, because I think at times God says, so how's that working out for you? You know, and it's not, I don't think he's being snarky and unkind. It's just until you're actually ready to come to a place of going like, I guess I need to do this with you. Because I think some people go like, all they hear is, oh, then you just do nothing. And I'm going like, no, that's not the same thing as abiding in his love. That's a wholly different thing. Doing nothing is being a couch potato. And it's like, God bless that. That actually might help some of our overdoers to kind of sentence themselves to being still and discovering that God's energy, his life, and it transforming from the inside out. I think I realize unless it's flowing from my heart because God has actually done a work there, Brad doesn't lead to good conclusions.
No, neither does Wayne.
Yeah. And I'm going like all of my religious activity, even if I was to say it was well-intentioned, it doesn't produce the same life-giving results as opposed to following him.
And Kyle and I have talked recently about how much of that is under threat. We do what we do with God because we're threatened with hell or threatened with being outside of his grace and glory. So we're kind of not responding to love and affection. We're trying to run from threat and danger. And that creates a whole different psychology of our engagement with God than simply trusting, surrendering, knowing God is with me. He loves me. He has a way through this. I want to relax into that way. You asked about the restlessness thing, which always has been important to me. When I feel like I'm following what God wants, there's a rest inside. Even if yeah. the circumstances are worse, there's a real difference between what's going on inside and what's going on outside. And if I have that rest, I have a pretty good assurance. This is where the Holy Spirit is leading me. And when I'm getting involved in something that is more Wayne than God, there's a restlessness.
Yeah, and impatience.
And impatience, but also I'm always justifying. No, oh, this is what I need to do. I don't have any other options with this one. So you're always trying to fight the restlessness by justifying why this is the only way I can do it, or this is the way God must be doing it. And you quote scriptures. You can do all kinds of things yeah. to justify. I've learned now when I feel restless about something going on that I just pause and back away from it and go, I'm not sure this is – and it can be – great circumstances outside, but restlessness inside. And restlessness yeah. always makes me lean back into Jesus, going, where's this restlessness coming from?
Has it taken a while for you to become, in essence, aware of that in you? Because I just sort of find like life runs at such a massive pace and information overload that for a lot of people, to them, to be able to calibrate what they're actually feeling inside, they don't seem to be able to even kind of sit and do that.
And unfortunately, a lot of our Christian religion has taught us not to be restless or not to recognize restlessness. Just slap on the proof text, slap on whatever, and just keep going, even if nothing's working.
Yeah.
Even if it's just all contrived to some degree. Yes, it has taken a significant time. Like I've told people, it took 2 years to find the trailhead of what it meant to live loved. And now I've been exploring it for 28 years. And I would say I know some things, but there's more I don't know than I know.
Uh-huh.
There's places where I sit with God and say, I have no idea what you want to do here. And if you've got something to show me, show me. And oftentimes he doesn't for like months because there's nothing I can do right now. There's nothing he has for that. That's why it's more important to relax into what his thoughts are for my day rather than trying to get him to answer my thoughts for the day. But yeah, I tell people to relax, take some time, learn to communicate with God out of your heart. You've been used to doing it out of your head. That's all we know to do.
Yeah.
And it's easy in times of desperation or times of whatever to default back to the head stuff, which is not all that effective. Let the head marry with the heart, but the heart is where that's where God reveals his love. That's where God reveals his stuff. Out of that comes those extraneous thoughts in my head that realize at times they're addressing me in the first person. Wayne, I want you to. And I'm like, whoa, that's not how I talk to me.
No.
So that gives me a clue. This might be more Jesus-y. And then I think it's wonderful to take those things that you feel like God's nudging you toward and share them with some other people who know what it is to walk with God. Not necessarily religious people who get scared to death that you're listening to something you shouldn't be listening to, but people who know God and just say, you know, I've been thinking about this and I kind of hearing this. Does that sound like that could be God to you?
That's one of the things that I think is challenging for those who are not in the institutional box system. So oftentimes they don't immediately have that community of those who are walking alongside them that can help validate and sort those things out. I mean, I think that's what I have loved over. I don't even know how long we've known each other, but it's somewhere close to 25 years.
Yeah, it is. We met at the 2000.
And so I look at this and I'm going like, I've had someone that I can share things with to go like, is that crazy or could that be true?
And I have too.
Yeah. And I think because of that, it has allowed that exploration of truth without the fear of getting it wrong or somehow, you know, you've become the standing heretic. It's like, well, I know another good heretic that I can talk with.
We're both like people write me and say, well, that least lets me know I'm not crazy. And then I write back, unless we both are, which is always the possibility. But I encourage people, and I've had this happen so many times, if they say, I don't know anybody like that, ask God. Yeah. Ask God to show you someone who lives near. You probably know them. You just haven't really understood their walk enough to get the help that you could get from them. But ask God for some people. Maybe it's somebody you'll meet for the first time, like some crazy people in Barbados. It could happen a number of ways, but be open to the way that God wants to do this with you too. God wants to build a community around you. We think we've got to do it ourselves instead of looking for the way God's doing it.
You know, what's been interesting is there's a lot more unreligious people in my life than religious ones. And I found that they're helpful too, because they don't have a lot of the same religious diseases. They have the capacity to kind of be honest seekers. They may not know the truth like pretend, like I can pretend to. But the truth is if they're honestly seeking, you can run those things by them too. And they just may have an honest heart that's a good sounding board.
And you don't have to run it by them by saying, I think God told me this morning. But you could just say, I'm thinking about this. Does this make sense to you? Now,
I think if we could strip away the religiousness of how we like try to walk these things out or sort them out, truth does have a ring to it. It has a life-giving reality that kind of says, that makes it simpler. That seems to be life-giving. It just has a weight to it that I'm going like, I have that with a lot of different conversations with people that I'm going like, wow, I would not have validated them as a life pursuer, you know?
But they were.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm going like, that's helpful.
It is. And if we can get rid of those religious sensibilities that sometimes hold us back, and really, I think that's a great thing. See what's alive, what's true, what's life-giving. And
yeah.
Follow that. And then if you find you're going down a road that doesn't bear that fruit, come back. Let God lead you the way he wants to lead you. A lot of this is trial and error.
Have you ever been wrong?
No, today?
Yeah. No, but I think that's a huge fear for a lot of people that's almost paralyzing. I'm so terrified that I might get it wrong. I'm going like, wow, there's an awful lot to unpack just in that presupposition.
Yeah.
So I probably have more things wrong on the true scale of how God would see them than I necessarily do have things right. But that's not stopping God from moving me along in the journey.
Yeah, and that's part of the religious exacting God narrow road. If you don't get everything exactly right, you're going to pay the price for it. Instead of, no, in his love, he gets to teach us. And teaching us involves trying some things and following some stuff and relaxing. And his grace is bigger than your performance.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the things, and I don't have the address, but, you know, if we recognize that I am absolutely loved by God and I'm not purposed for wrath, or that God is like looking at me like, what's wrong with you kind of thing. The more I'm convinced of his love for me, I think the easier this journey really is to respond to him, because the less performance that comes out of me.
For sure. And that you got to look at Jesus with the disciples. They continued to get things wrong. It never changed his love for them.
Awesome.
Thank you for traveling with us today on the God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.